Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Voting or vote counting continues in Lebanon's parliamentary elections as many people hope the result would help resolve the country's economic problems. The German foreign minister says NATO countries are ready to provide military assistance to Ukraine in its war with Russia as long as it is needed. And one person is killed and several others are injured in a shooting at a church in California just a day after a gunman killed 10 people in New York. Thank you for joining us. Vote counting is underway in Lebanon, where people went to the polls to choose a new parliament, I should say. To discuss that further, we were joined by our guests earlier in this program.
So now for our news review segment, where we take a look at one of our stories in more detail. Vote counting is underway in Lebanon, where people went to the polling stations to choose a new parliament. Results are expected Monday. The Interior Ministry put the turnout at just over 40%. Nearly 4 million people were eligible to vote. 128 seats are up for grabs. Over 700 candidates competed to enter parliament. The elections come amid an unprecedented economic crisis that began in 2019. The crisis has led to a currency collapse and plunged over 70% of the population into poverty. The Hezbollah resistance movement blames the crisis on a US-led conspiracy against Lebanon. The next parliament is due to vote on key reforms required by the International Monetary Fund to unlock financial support. Joining us is our correspondent, Maryam Saleh, from the Beirut, the Lebanese capital. Also from the Lebanese capital is Ali Hamai, author and researcher in strategic and political affairs. Maryam, if I could start with you, are there any reports on early results of Sunday's election?
Well, the only reports that we do have are from the various offices, whether of Hezbollah or the Amal movement and the other groups. They all have their own offices where their delegates or their representatives within the polling station were present during the counting. And so, therefore, they do have preliminary results of the beginning. But we do have a huge number of votes that still have not been counted. You also have the expats votes that are being separately counted in the judiciary ministry, of course. Well, this is one issue. We need to wait, of course, for the official results to come out. But what we do know so far is that in areas where Hezbollah and its allies had gained the majority or had gained seats in 2018, they will continue to gain those seats, especially in areas like South and the Bekaa and Baalbek, where Hezbollah are quite strong. They have so much support there. And just to mention some of the issues that, of course, during the media campaigns, there was so much talk that the Shiite community, for example, is displeased with Hezbollah's internal politics and so on and so forth. And so there many people will vote for those candidates that are considered running for change, or those candidates that are considered part of non-governmental institutions or civil society that are supported mainly, most of them, by the U.S. embassy. But when you see the numbers that we have so far, there is a huge gap. There is a huge difference between, for example, head of the Hezbollah bloc in the parliament, Mr. Mohammad Radi, has 35,000 votes. You have those who are against Hezbollah not reaching 1,000 votes. So this is why this shows that discrepancy and how Hezbollah still has the full support of the Shiite community. But what is more significant than the Hezbollah results is the results of its allies, and that would be heard through the results that we would, might see from the Free Patriotic Movement. We heard recently from the head of the Free Patriotic Movement, Gibran Basile, saying that also we need to wait for the results, but what he can tell us for sure, he said in a presser, is that the Free Patriotic Movement does have seats in everywhere it ran, even if it might lose some seats. But all in all, Hezbollah and its allies will not be losing the majority. There is even a possibility that they might be even gaining more seats as a whole, despite the fact that some groups like the Lebanese forces led by Samir Jaja might be gaining a few more seats as a result of the continuous Saudi pressure that was being put on the Sunni candidates to be with them, with the fact right. that Saad Hariri has now been disqualified.
Okay, Mariam, let me switch over to Ali. Ali, if you can give us an idea of the key concerns among the voters in this election.
Yes, sir. You know, as Secretary General said, Hassan Nasrallah said, this is not only a very important era now, it's a fateful one. It's a crossroad of Lebanon to raise up from its economic crisis and to protect the army of the resistance, the arms of the resistance, or the weapon of the resistance. And, you know, supported by all the resistance allies in Lebanon, just to gain this election battle in order to defeat the Zionist American Gulf state access. So we are now at crossroad to give Lebanon a new ID, being staying strong to protect its sea border and to have been to be protected against Israeli atrocities and aggressions from time to time, and the other parties in Lebanon, they have no program, you know, to save Lebanon from any crisis economically or otherwise. They have no program to protect Lebanon from any attack, from any enemy. So,
are you suggesting that the key concerns of the voters is to maintain Lebanon's sovereignty and territorial integrity?
Exactly. This is exactly it. By protecting, you know, we have two axes now in Lebanon. One is to protect the resistance and its armaments, and the other one is only programmed to disarmament. You know, the program is disarmament of Hezbollah power, just to be useless. And this is will not help Lebanon at all. Not now, not before, not after. So it seems that it's very clear. It's very clear. We are at crossroads, and this is the main concern of us, to just vote for the resistance allies in Lebanon, just to gain this. I think it's a war of election.
Mariam Saleh from the Beirut, the Lebanese capital. Ali Hamai, thank you for your contribution. Ali is an author and researcher in strategic and political affairs, also joining us from the Lebanese capital. That brings an end to another edition of the News Review.
Welcome back. Israeli forces have attacked Palestinian protesters in the occupied West Bank city of Al Bira. The protesters were out on the streets to mark the anniversary of Nakba Day, or the Day of Catastrophe. That's when Israel was created 74 years ago. Soldiers used tear gas and live ammunition to disperse the demonstrators. The protesters waved Palestinian flags and denounced Israeli crimes. They held placards with signs reiterating their right to return to their ancestral land. The protesters also carried pictures of journalist Shireen Abu Akla, who was fatally shot by Israeli forces on Wednesday. Similar rallies took place in other West Bank cities as well as the besieged Gaza Strip.
Palestinians Palestinians took to the streets across the occupied West Bank to commemorate decades of ethnic cleansing of their homeland by Zionist militias, when an estimated 700,000 Palestinians were expelled from their homes and villages in 1948 to make way for new Jewish immigrants to create what's known today as Israel. For the Palestinians, Nakba means a painful and sad occasion, but it's also a reminder that the younger generation will exert all effort to stick to the right of return.
Look around you. After all these years, all the Palestinian refugees and thousands of people are taking part in this rally. This is insistence. We will never abandon our right to return. It's one of our inalienable rights.
Today we're here to tell the whole world that returning to our villages is our right. Once they said the elders will die, but now we will tell them the youngsters will never give up.
A 74-second siren was sounded across the West Bank at 12 noon local time, marking the 74 years that have passed since their Nakba, the catastrophe. Demonstrators from all walks of life and of all ages held maps of historical Palestine and large metal keys to symbolize their homes from which were forced to leave decades ago. The anniversary also comes as anger is boiling over the Israeli killing of prominent Al Jazeera veteran journalist Shirin Abu Akleh.
Nakba anniversary has always been painful to all the Palestinians, and this year is more painful. Like every year, we commemorate our Nakba to tell the world that our homeland is unforgettable. That's why you can see people are still holding the keys to their ancestors' homes, as they still believe that they will return to their homes one day, and hopefully it'll be very soon.
Nearly 5 million Palestinian refugees remain scattered in different camps in the besieged Gaza Strip, the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds, Lebanon, Jordan and Syria, including others dispersed around the world. All of them have a mutual dream, which is returning to historical Palestine.
Since 1948, Palestinians have remained steadfast in defending their right to return to their homeland despite Israel's continued ethnic cleansing policies. For Palestinians, Nakba remains a painful episode in history, and the agony continues to be felt amid Israel's escalated violence and crimes. Mona Qandil, Occupied Ramallah.
People have rallied in the U.S. city of New York to mark the anniversary of Nakba, or Day of Catastrophe, and condemn the Israeli killing of Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Akleh.
Shirin Abu Akleh, we knew her for tens of years, and she was a very good reporter, and she was not biased. She was just reflecting what's happening in the occupied land, and she was mercilessly murdered.
I myself am Jewish, and I feel like it is a very strong and deep duty to criticize the Israeli government and stand up for the oppressed Palestinians that have been living there for hundreds of thousands of years.
Similar protests have also been held in other countries in solidarity with the Palestinians. Protesters in Australia, Austria, Denmark, the UK, and other parts of the world denounce Israeli brutalities against the Palestinians. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman slams the United States' approach towards human rights, saying Washington uses the issue to pursue its own goals. Said Khatibzadeh said Washington has degraded the notion of human rights by using it as code, a tool in its foreign policy toolbox. He also criticized other major powers for abusing human rights, which he said is one of the most important victims of international relations at the present. The Secretary General of the Western Military Alliance, NATO, says Ukraine is capable of defeating Russia, adding Europe and North America are united in supporting Kiev.
But Ukraine stands. NATO is stronger than ever. Europe and North America are solidly united. Ukraine can win this war. Ukrainians are bravely defending their homeland.
Speaking virtually at a NATO meeting in Berlin, Jens Stoltenberg urged the alliance to keep sending military aid to Ukraine. His call was echoed by German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock. She reiterated that NATO members are ready to provide military assistance to Ukraine for as long as needed to help it repel Russia's invasion. She said NATO should help Ukraine defend itself. This comes as the United States has already set aside some $40 billion in military and financial assistance to Ukraine. There is no end in sight to gun violence in the United States. A shooting at a church in California leaves one dead and five people injured. The Orange County Sheriff's Department says four of those injured are in critical condition. The gunman was detained outside the Geneva Presbyterian Church. The incident comes just a day after a mass shooting at a supermarket in the city of Buffalo, New York. Saturday's attack, which was racially motivated, left 10 people dead and three wounded. 11 of the victims were black. Police says 18-year-old Peyton Gendron, now in custody, was live streaming his carnage. According to media reports, Gendron had written a white supremacist manifesto prior to the shooting. He's been charged with first-degree murder. Earlier, we were joined by Frank Emspach, an emeritus professor from the University of Wisconsin. He says white supremacy is a core belief in the United States and has been part of the country's culture for two centuries now.
Lately, of course, people recognize that there's a shift demographically. And everybody says that, you know, in 10 years or 20 years, white people will be a minority. Well, if for 200 years of the country's existence, more or less, white supremacy was part of the culture, part of the legal business here, it's very, very hard to all of a sudden say, well, that's all gone, in a deep way. Not necessarily people running around saying, well, I'm a white supremacist, but a really sort of core belief in part of the country. And that is what got expression and is expressed by the supremacy theory, by the replacement theory, and hence extraordinarily dangerous in a society like ours, where guns are very, very widely available and people use them.
And that does it for this edition of World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Iran's growing political, economic, and cultural ties with the Persian Gulf states of Qatar and Oman provide an excellent model for regional cooperation. If only the other three members of the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council, PGCC, including Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Bahrain, summon up the courage to reconsider their flawed policies that are serving the vested interest of the U.S., and the illegal Zionist entity. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kayhan, international staff writer. This article is published under the heading Iran-Qatar Set the Trend for Regional Cooperation. Stay tuned for more. Iran's growing political, economic, and cultural ties with the Persian Gulf states of Qatar and Oman, and to a lesser extent with Kuwait, provide an excellent model for regional cooperation. If only the other three members of the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council, PGCC, including Saudi Arabia, the UAE and Bahrain, summon up the courage to reconsider their flood policies that are serving the vested interests of the United States and the illegal Zionist entity. The recent visit to Tehran of the Emir of Qatar, Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, at the head of a large delegation, and his talks with senior Iranian officials on various issues, including the chronic question of Palestine, is a firm indication in this regard. It was his second visit, following the one in January 2020, and he was granted an audience with the leader of the Islamic Revolution, who pointed out the need for expanding Tehran-Doha ties to their full capacity. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei stressed the necessity of increasing political and economic relations between Iran and Qatar, and stated that the way to resolve regional issues must be sought without the interference of foreign elements. Referring to the continuation of the crimes being committed by the Zionist regime against the people of Palestine, he said, "The Arab world is expected to explicitly enter into political action against these open crimes." Sheikh Tamim, who earlier this year in February had played host in Doha to Iranian President Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi, reiterated the necessity to further solidify bilateral relations in a number of fields. As strongly condemned, along with the Iranian president in the joint press conference, the latest Zionist regime crime in the cold-blooded killing of Al Jazeera TV correspondent in Palestine, Shirin Abu Aghaleh. There are wide scopes of cooperation between Iran and Qatar, including in the media and sports fields, especially with the approach of the FIFA World Cup to be held in Doha from November 21st to December 18th. The Islamic Republic of Iran has made preparations to play host to thousands of football fans from all over the world in view of the limited capacity of hotels in Qatar, coupled with the short distance between Doha and the Iranian resorts on the Persian Gulf. Daily to and fro flights would be operating between the two countries to facilitate travel for the spectators. Iran and Qatar shared the giant Pars gas field in the Persian Gulf, and besides the export of wide-ranging Iranian products, including industrial and agricultural, plans are underway to lay a submarine freshwater pipeline from Bushehr to Doha. Qatar has one of the highest electricity consumptions in the world and is eager to connect its power grid to the Iranian network. Iran, which currently provides electricity to Iraq, the Caucasus Republic of Azerbaijan, Armenia, Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, has welcomed the move as a step towards strengthening energy diplomacy. Such cooperation, which is indeed a slap on the U.S. face, could serve as a model for other Persian Gulf states, provided they have the guts to rectify wrongs, such as the Saudi war on Yemen and the repression of the Bahraini nation by the Al Khalifa minority regime, as well as the unnatural ties between the fabricated regime of Israel, Abu Dhabi, and Manama.
food for thought.
Hello, everyone. We now present you a statement from the Lord of the Age, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, who, despite being in the state of occultation, keeps his eyes on the followers of the school of the Prophet's infallible Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them. We are neither negligent of caring for you nor forgetful of you, and if it were not for that, hardship would have befallen you and the enemies would have massacred you. So fear God and support us.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters, dear listeners from all around the world, Assalamu alaikum and welcome to another edition from a series of Q&A in Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. Like always, we have invited a scholar from Qom Seminary Schools, Sheikh Nur Muhammad, to the show to help us answer the questions that we pose in this series of shows. Usually, we are trying to answer doubts or misconceptions and Islamic beliefs. The doubts which have been asked by different questioners from around the world. The question of the day that we need to ask it from the respected guest speaker of the show, Sheikh Nur Muhammad, is about the atheists and their beliefs and the moral standards that they actually believe in. It has been said, or it has been written and talked about, that even the atheists resort to some moral standards. The question that comes to one's mind is that, is it possible for an atheist to have some moral standards, and what are they, and how they are actually attaching themselves to these moral standards? This is a question that we need to ask it from the respected guest speaker of the show. Sheikh, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for accepting the invitation. It's a great pleasure. Sheikh, the question that comes to the mind, okay, let's say that the atheists have some moral standards for themselves and they have defined some criteria for that. But what is the guarantee for performing and for being loyal to these moral or moralities that they have defined? Is it possible for a person who does not believe in anything, believe in something that has been defined by themselves? So how can we guarantee that they can back such an idea?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, atheism believe in the some kind of the ethics, which is talking about the independent of religion or ethics without God. Mm-hmm. It is famous for the atheism and atheists to have these kind of ethics. They want to omit religion or God from, ethical issues. And that you can guess which kind of, ethics that we are talking about.
Yeah.
In this particular ethics, they actually, you may call it the kind of materialistic or ethics, or ethic which is around the selfish or self-interest, I want to say that what matters for those people is my pleasure. My mm-hmm. absolute pleasure and my self-interest.
True.
Okay. To some extent, some kind of centricity of self and the interest of self. And whatever related to this issue, mm-hmm. I can use that. Whatever yeah. means. Mm-hmm. I want to say that what matters to these people is actually, individual pleasure and individual, self-interest. And to obtain a lot of wealth and money. These are the foundation and the basis for, those people who have the same idea and to have the same culture, let's say. Mm-hmm. And of course, they use different means for obtaining those bases and, those goals. Sometimes these means can be not to lie. Or, for example, not to cheat. If you want to have some kind of business, the means that I want to get my self-pleasure and my self-interest is to not to lie in order for another person not to lie to me, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I respect this guy in order that guy respect me. I do not cheat because I need to have this my self-interest, okay?
Yeah.
And because of that, all these ideals, they have been used as a means for getting my pleasure and my self-esteem.
True.
The reason that I say that they can use it as a means, in a case that there is no need for these means, for example, I have power, and I do not need to have these kind of, let's say, honesty.
True.
And not to cheat, not to lie, and other issues, ethical issues. okay, when I have power and I do not need those ideas and those means, it means that, okay, I can forget about that. No longer I do not need these kind of means. So I can easily cheat, I can easily lie, I can easily kill.
Very true.
When I have the power, I do not need you. I have everything available. So why? There is no need. Okay? So my self-interest and my self-pleasure, which was a foundation and my final purpose, requires me to lie, to cheat, to kill. So it's okay. I can do all of that. You know?
So what is this criteria that they are talking about? And they say that, okay, we atheists, even we have our standards and we have our criteria. So what are they are actually believing in?
You know, the criteria is my self-pleasure and my self-interest.
Human-centrism.
Yes. Maybe you can say, not, you know, myself, you know, not even talking about the human being. Because when we say human, it has some kind of societal
dimension. I mean, human-centrism in the sense of humanism. Humanism in the sense that I am the center of everything. Yeah. I am not others, not God, not anyone else. So whatever comes, whatever is important to me, that makes sense, not anything else.
Yeah, of course. This is a, unfortunately, I have to say that this is a dominant culture. In different countries, unfortunately, some people, they believe in that and they practice it.
Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Some are not calling themselves, and they do not actually claim that they are atheists, but they act like an atheist. So when the importance of self comes in between, then we are the, let's say, center of all goodnesses and badnesses. So whatever is important in the universe should be looked at the level of, should be looked at to the will of me rather than the others, or even Allah's. Allah's will and Allah's order.
Exactly, you know, because if you have these kinds of idea, you know, look at everything, every ethical issues as a means for having and for obtaining my own pleasure and my self-interest, it has these consequences. Okay, but let me explain the opposite side of that, which Islamic ethics, maybe in order to make the atheist ethic more clear for our dear audience. In Islamic ethics, you see, we have fadail and radail, which means we have the
values and excellences.
Excellences, which is they have their own value. They have their own value in it. And it has, it's talking about the other bad trait and positive traits and the negative trait. And these positive and negative traits and character, they have the, they enjoy their own, let's say, value. And, in any time, in any place, you know, they obtain their value. Even, you know, if meets my, you know, this value, they meets my pleasure or it does not meet that, I have to do that, okay?
Very true.
And it has a strong foundation of that, and the foundation and the backing of that ideas and ethical issues in Islam is faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You know, iman, billah ta'ala wal amal as-salih, which means to have faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and to have righteous action, and to have the strong belief in hereafter. It is again very important. Let me make it clear. For example, in the verses of Noble Quran, we have ma yalfidhu min qawlin illa ladayhi raqibun atid. Whatever you express, even a single word, some angels, they are witnessing, they are present, and they are witnessing and recording your wordings. Okay?
Very true.
So, it doesn't matter whether it serves your interest or not, your self-pleasure or not, It doesn't matter. Sometimes you need to sacrifice for the sake of Allah, for the sake of other people. Okay? To sacrifice your life, to rescue the life of other people. And so, for example, we have in the, you know, different occasion, different verses of Noble Quran, some people, including Ahlul Bayt, the pure progeny of Noble Prophet, they gave away the food. For three consecutive days, they did not eat, they did not have the, you know, sufficient eating, and they sacrifice it to the other people.
But such beautiful and high values and excellences cannot be looked in the atheistic worldview. Because as you said and explained earlier, so all whatever is being seen is my own self. Not others, not God, not anyone around in my vicinity, no one else.
Of course, when you do not believe in hereafter, you do not have proper faith in Allah, when you do not have righteous action, it does not have any backing, any basis, okay? And any logic, you can say, for your ethics. What matters is your own pleasure and your own self-interest.
Very true.
Okay? And it can be changing, you know, because of that, some of them, they believe in the relativism of the ethical issues. Okay?
Very true, yeah.
It means that if there are not absolute ethical issues, we do not have absolute ethical, let's say, elements, and they can be changed in different time and in different circumstances.
So all the values are not absolute, rather they are all relative.
Exactly.
So everything can be looked at as a relative. So it's a sort of dangerous belief that can enter in anyone's belief, Sheikh. What is the, let's say, remedy and cure for such a bad, let's say, sickness and disease?
The remedy is actually to think about this issue, to have intellectual process and intellectual effort to think whether in this universe I've been created whether to serve my own interest. What about other people? What about poor people? Okay, living in different countries, in different lands, and you know, other problems. Why are you not thinking about the, you know, war striking people in different countries? You know,
very true.
You know, different problems of society, different people in different land. Why are you not thinking about those people?
I want just to have a short comment on what you beautifully mentioned. I want to say that in Islamic worldview, it's not that you have to only, you need to ignore about yourself. No, we have to have your own relation. We need to define a relation with God, with our people around us and society, and with our own self, and with the nature. So these are the worldview that Islam gives us. So again, your own self is important, because man arafa nafsa faqad arafa rabbah.
Your own self is important, but it is not all the story.
Oh, exactly.
It is part of the story.
Part of the story. Let's say one-fourth of the whole story, based on the ahadith that we can refer to.
In the verse of Noble Quran, we have, وَلَا تَنْسَ نَصِيبَكَ مِنَ الدُّنْيَا. And do not forget about your share from this material life. But
definitely,
when you have extra, give it in the way of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Very true. Very true.
Okay?
Yeah.
Not to totally think and to concentrate only on yourself. Not to be selfish. Not to be self-centered. This is a point that Islam is emphasizing on.
Thank you very much, dear Sheikh, for your elaboration and scholarly explanations on this topic. So we reached to this conclusion that there is no executive guarantee for those who actually believe that they are atheists to have their moral standards up. Anyhow, all in all, we need to first think about who we are and where we are now, and then to know about our duties and look at the world, look at the universe with another eye. Thank you very much, dear Sheikh, and your respected listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. Li aliyin wa husayin wa hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن
حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Stopping by and listening to street musicians usually changes our mood for the rest of the day. The experience would be different if one lies under the instrument while it is being played. And that's exactly what a pianist in America has done. Colin Huggins, a busker, wheels his grand piano more than a half a mile from a mini storage to New York's Washington Square Park. He lets people lie down under the instrument and feel the vibrations from the claviers in their bodies. Colin says he wants to help people recover emotionally from the intense disconnect they had faced during COVID lockdowns.
I've always wanted to accommodate feelings in the best way possible, and I wanted to do it with music, and this is the best way I figure out how to do it. Maybe someday I'll figure out a way to do it even better, and I won't need to push this piano here. But as of now, this is the best I've got.
New York was one of the hardest hit cities by COVID in the U.S. Like other places, the major city imposed lockdowns and tough curbs to contain the virus. Despite that, Colin continued playing on the streets, frequently to an audience of zero. He says he strongly believes that everything will be okay. Cambodian fishermen aiming for small fish were shocked to see the surprise catch tied to their hook. This creature was nothing but an endangered giant freshwater stingray, which had swallowed the fishermen's catch. It was 4 meters long and weighed 180 kilos. The female leviathan is one of the rarest species of fish in Southeast Asia. Therefore, a team of international experts helped unhook the stingray to release it back to the waters unharmed.
All right, so we've just released our giant stingray back into the wild. She's kind of hanging out on the surface of the river here. It's amazing to be able to see her swimming around in her natural habitat and to have participated in the release of this giant stingray today.
The giant stingray was caught in the Mekong River, an important habitat for different species of fish, including huge catfish and barb. However, experts say the river's underwater ecosystem has been damaged by massive plastic wastes. Environmentalists constantly warn that building dams on the Mekong River is also destroying its large fish stock.
Scaling Mount Everest is only a dream for many and a once-in-a-lifetime achievement for most professional mountaineers. Well, not for this Nepali Sherpa, who has now repeated the feat for a record 26th time. 52-year-old Kami Rita led a group of other Sherpa climbers along the traditional Southeast Ridge route to the world's tallest peak. In the process, he beat his own previous record set last year. Rita first scaled Everest in 1994 and has been making the trip nearly every year since then. The Sherpa community is an ethnic group indigenous to the Himalayan region. They are expert mountain navigators who also carry heavy loads. Everest stands nearly 9,000 meters above sea level. The mountain has been climbed more than 10,000 times since it was first scaled in 1954. 53. The bad news is more than 300 people have died trying. Chinese scientists are establishing a meteorological monitoring station at an altitude of 8,800 meters on Mount Komolangma, the world's highest peak on the China-Nepal border. The 13 members of the research team started the trek towards an 8,300-meter base camp on Mount Komolangma from a 7,028-meter camp on Tuesday morning. They reached the camp in the afternoon and went on the last section of the arduous journey up on Wednesday morning. It replaces the one at an altitude of 8,430 meters set up by the British and U.S. scientists on the mountains in 2019. While some drivers are obsessed with the speed, some others have a passion for the look of their cars. In Tehran, car tuning lovers have assembled for the biggest show of modified vehicles. Yusuf Jalali has the story.
Fast and furious. It's the biggest show of personal cars turned SUVs. Held in Tehran's Island Karting Track, the event brought together more than 500 motorists to flaunt their modified cars.
This is the only place where car tuning lovers can vent their energy and show off their beautiful cars. When I saw the call for such a big assembly of modified vehicles, I didn't waste a moment and decided to bring my car here.
Exhausts sound deeper, with flames popping out. Sound systems rattle the car roofs. And regular doors are replaced by butterfly doors, opening upward. To these people, car tuning is more than a hobby, but a passion. Majid says he has spent double the price of this Peugeot 206 to turn it into a green beast.
For us, our cars mean everything. To me, it's love. I save whatever I earn to spend on my car. So I urge the police to respect this love and stop fining us when we roll with our cars on the streets.
Based on Iran's traffic regulations, drivers are not allowed to alter the original design of their cars. Installing loudspeakers and noisy exhaust systems, and even attaching stickers, are associated with fines. Omid says he can't take this. He has transformed his Iranian-made car, dubbed Rana, into a whole new model, saying it looks better now on the street.
I spent whatever I could afford to make the streets look better with our cars, but the police are treating us like we are wrongdoers. I myself oppose dangerous driving in the city. What I want is just to make my car look more attractive.
Car tuning encompasses any modification to a vehicle that would lead to a higher engine performance and dynamic handling of the car. As long as these people stick to these rules, police will not have issues. Otherwise, they must keep these beauties inside their parking lots.
Thank you. However eye-catching they are, these mutated cars are no longer road pets and are good for drifting on tracks like this. Organizers say that's exactly why they held this show. To provide a chance for car tuning maniacs to vent their energy in a safe place. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The third long-duration team of astronauts launched by SpaceX to the International Space Station ISS for NASA safely departed the orbiting outpost to begin their descent back to Earth, capping a six-month science mission. Live video showing the capsule drifting away from the station as the two vehicles soared high over Australia was shown on a NASA webcast. wearing helmeted white and black spacesuits, the four astronauts were seen strapped into the crew cabin shortly before the spacecraft separated from the station, orbiting some 400 kilometers above the Earth. NASA said one of the cosmonauts, Oleg Artemyev, assumed command of the ISS from Marshburn in a handover before Thursday's undocking.
And I relinquish control of the or command of the space station to you.
I accept command. I accept command. Thank you for here. Thank you for friendship. It was unbelievable time to get.
If all goes smoothly, the Crew Dragon craft dubbed Endurance will parachute into the sea off the coast of Florida on Friday. Their departure came about a week after they welcomed their replacement team aboard the station, also currently home to three Russian cosmonauts on a long-term mission. Iran's capital, Tehran, is hosting the country's most high-profile robotics event, dubbed RoboCop Iran Open. The event seeks to promote robotics and artificial intelligence by holding tournaments. Yusuf Shalali has the story.
They may not be able to face human soccer players just yet, but these robot footballers are taking their baby steps toward achieving this goal. The 16th edition of RoboCop Iran Open brought together 100 teams from across the country to compete in different fields of robotics and artificial intelligence, with a focus on soccer robots.
Our robot is a soccer player that moves with its wheels. It's totally different from humanoid robots, but it can certainly challenge them and beat them in a football match.
We have taken part in the Maze League of the RoboCop games. It's the first time I'm involved in this big competition, where I have to implement all my programming, mechanics and electronics skills to win the game. I am so excited.
Organizers say RoboCop seeks to promote robotics and artificial intelligence by offering IT experts a real-time challenge to build the most capable robots.
The idea of RoboCop competitions is to increase the creativity of IT experts in developing efficient robots. Why soccer? Because first of all, it is a highly popular sport, and second, it is a highly strategic game that requires a robot to perform many difficult tasks, which, if accomplished, can turn them into strong and capable robots.
RoboCop Iran Open is part of the international initiative dubbed Robot Soccer World Cup, or shortly, RoboCop. The event was first launched in 1997 and was inspired by the victory of a computer chess player against the then world chess champion, Garry Kasparov. The official goal of the competition, as stated by its organizers, is to hone the capabilities of humanoid robot soccer players so that they will win a soccer game against the winner of the most recent FIFA World Cup in mid-21st century.
While robots still have a long way to go before they can challenge the likes of Messi and Ronaldo, the ultimate goal of RoboCop is not about robot footballers beating human rivals, but the technology advances that can be made along the way to improve our lives. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
IRIB English Radio.